to play. Play what?
He told me you'd say that, too. Play anything. Play something you'd play with the band.
I thought for a moment and then played a familiar pattern. Sam interrupted me rather quickly.
I can tell you've played that lick like a zillion times, right?
Of course he was right. Yes, I have.
Okay, then. Stop thinking about it. Your rhythm is all screwed up. You've been playing the bass guitar and that lick long enough that you shouldn't have to think about them anymore. If you have to think about them all the time, that's what you'll play. And if you continue to play only your bass and your licks, when will you ever get to play music?
Wow, are you sure you're only 11? I asked, not expecting an answer. It was a good point. A great point, actually. What should I think about then?
Well, for now, think about your timing, because when you're playing by yourself, it's not that good. When you play with a drummer, it is good. So I recommend that you hear the drummer as you play. Even before you play, hear the drummer in your head. Do that for a few bars before you begin this time.
Taking his advice, I imagined a drummer playing a steady beat. When I was ready, I played along. This time, even I could tell it was better. It felt good. I could see Sam bouncing his head to the beat like a little dark-haired bobblehead doll. Then I hit a wrong note and my attention went back to the bass. Sam heard it too.
No! For this exercise, keep your full attention on the drummer. You don't need to think about the bass at all, even when you play a wrong note.
I did that for a while longer, following Sam's gentle instructions. He also gave me other things to experiment with. At one point, he asked me to imagine an explosion going off on the first beat of each measure, assuring me that it would surely lock me into the rhythm. It did. Sam suggested that when I'm on a gig, I should divide my attention between myself and the rest of the band. But for these specific exercises, all attention should go to the focus points he was giving me. The young man then turned on the drum machine, which he'd already programmed with a 4-bar pattern. He instructed me to play and told me to stick to a simple groove, not to solo. I did that until he felt I was comfortable. Then he made a change on the machine. He played the same pattern, but this time the 4th bar was completely empty. For 1 bar of the pattern, I was playing without the drums. This was to see how steady I could hold the time by myself and then come back in on beat 1. The machine would let me know if I was correct or not. Once I'd succeeded at that, Sam repeated the exercise 2 more times, first leaving out bars 3 and 4, and then leaving out bars 2, 3, and 4. That left me with only 1 full measure to find the rhythm and 3 measures not to lose it. As the exercise became progressively more difficult, he allowed me to get comfortable with each phase.
Even though the drums are not playing, the pulse is still there. You gotta grab onto that pulse as quickly as you can and lock it into your body. It's really important that you do that. Then you'll feel where you need to be at all times.
I knew what he was talking about. When playing with a good drummer, the pulse can easily be felt. Even though different drummers have different pulses, I still agreed with Sam. If I was really in the groove, I would definitely be able to feel the pulse.
Now, I'll make this just a little bit harder. This will tell us how locked in you really are.
He changed the drum machine once more. There were still 4 measures playing, but there was an audible beat programmed to play on beat 1 only. I only had 1 beat out of 16 to grasp the tempo. He can't be serious, I thought. He was. A bit intimidated, I closed my eyes and listened closely. To my surprise, I could do it, and I could still feel the pulse, and I locked into it. It was a little strange. Even though there was no audible pulse playing, I could definitely feel it. Only having one beat to go on, I kept perfect time for the next 15 beats. I was so happy that I felt like doing 3 cartwheels myself. I opened my eyes to see Sam fiddling with the drum machine once again. He changed it back to the original program consisting of 4 complete patterns.
Now, we'll start all over. Play the same groove, but this time start adding in some fills at the end of measures.
It was pretty easy until the drum machine started leaving out measures. It was then that I realized where my focus went whenever I played a fill. I rushed like crazy during every one of them, and the drum machine let me know it. Sam pointed out that during my fills, my attention would revert back to the bass. Thus, the groove would falter because of it. That was a big no-no, he told me.
Remember, for this exercise, keep your focus on the pulse, not on what you're playing.
When I succeeded at each phase of the exercise, he started the whole process over again, this time instructing me to all-out solo. It was difficult. Trying to figure out what to play and not lose the pulse was easier said than done. I did well at the beginning stages of the exercise, but when it got down to having only one beat out of 16, I was completely lost. Raising his hand to stop me, Sam spoke.
When you get to the place where you can solo to just one beat every 4 measures and not lose the pulse, playing with a drummer, even a bad drummer, will be a piece of cake. Here, let me show you.
He picked up my bass and played a very solid groove to the pattern consisting of only one beat. I was shocked. This 11-year-old boy could play, and he smiled the whole time. Maybe that's the key. If it worked on my headache, maybe it could work on my groove. He then proceeded to play the best bass solo I'd heard in a long time. He started with a 16th note pattern, leaving a space on beat 1 just so I would know he was right on it. He didn't deviate from the pulse even a little. Just when I thought it couldn't get any better, Sam took it to another level.
There's one more level to the one beat part of this exercise. It's an advanced level. You're not ready for it, but I'll show it to you anyway if you'd like.
I can't imagine anything more amazing than what you just did, but yes, please show me.
Before, when we were playing, we were focused on feeling the pulse. It was feeling the pulse that allowed us to stay in time. Now, the goal will be to lose the pulse altogether. Let's not focus on it. I'll try my best to have no idea where it is. I'll allow the feeling in my body to tell me how much space has gone by. Then I'll make a guess and see if I can play on beat 1.
He resumed playing to the one beat only pattern on the drum machine. At first, he allowed his amazing groove to take over, but then he started playing random patterns in no particular rhythm. He was talking to me at the same time. Every time beat 1 came around, he was right on it. It was pretty amazing, but it was nothing compared to what he was about to show me.
Turn the volume all the way down. There's a blinking light on the machine that'll tell you where beat 1 is. I won't look at it, but I'll still try to keep time with it. Let me know how I do.
I did what he asked when all of a sudden he did something unexpected. He put the bass down and walked into the kitchen. I kept my eyes between him and the drum machine. I didn't know what he planned to do. I could hear him pouring himself another glass of orange juice. Except for the sound of juice hitting the glass, it was silent in the room. Then I heard him from the kitchen shout, "One."
"One."
I was looking at the light on the drum machine, and he was right with it. It was unbelievable. It is still unbelievable. His voice and the blinking light were completely in sync. I watched as he walked down the hallway and into the bathroom. He relieved himself and flushed. After washing his hands, he again shouted, "One." It seemed impossible. If I wasn't witnessing it, I would have never believed that anyone's timing could be that good. Returning to the living room, he took a seat next to me on the couch. He looked directly into my eyes, as Michael had done many times before. For once, he wasn't smiling. His voice lowered.
"Music is alive, and if you treat her that way, She will speak to you. You will feel her pulse. That is her heartbeat. If you pay attention correctly, it won't matter if you're in another room or in another state. You'll still be able to feel it.
As he talked, Sam appeared much older. His voice took on the tone of someone much wiser than his age allowed. I listened carefully as he continued.
It doesn't have to take long to learn what I just did. Music is played from the mind, not the body. So do whatever you can to exercise your mind. That's very important, okay?
With that comment, he stood up to leave. I was in awe. Shouldn't you be in school? I joked.
This is school, isn't it?
He was smiling again. He then turned and walked away. As I watched him close the door, I sat there amazed at the little kid who had just given me a music lesson. Even though I was a bit embarrassed at the situation, I wished that someone else had been there to witness what I'd just been through. I knew that no one would believe me if I told them. I sat back on the couch trying to remember all that Sam had shown me. As I started to get up to get myself a glass of water, I realized that he'd left his drum machine. How would I ever find him to return it? I didn't know who he was or where he lived. I looked at the machine, noticing it was still running. Just then, I heard the door open. It was Sam.
One!
He shouted, just as the light blinked.
You can keep it. Thanks for a really fun day, sir. Timing is everything, isn't it?
I sat, stunned and silent. Measure 8, Tone.
Doctors use lasers to operate. Music, in the right hands, can do the same thing.
It was later that day, after Sam had left, that I was driving downtown. I hadn't seen Michael all day and was hesitant to leave my house for fear of missing him. I had a few questions about Sam I wanted to clear up. He told me that he had learned from Michael about 12 years earlier. Since he was only 11, that statement raised a few questions in my mind. I was driving through a pretty run-down part of town when I saw someone who resembled Michael. I drove around the block to get another look, and sure enough, it was him. He was sitting in the grass talking to a homeless man. Michael's clothes were more tattered and worn than I'd ever seen them. He looked like a homeless man himself. I wasn't sure if he wanted me to see him that way, but just as I decided to drive by, he stood up and flagged me down. I parked the car, locked the door, and walked over to him.
It took you long enough. I thought you never was going to show up.
You thought what? I never knew if he was serious when he said stuff like that, or if he was just improvising. I decided that it didn't matter. Also, his new dialect was confusing me.
This is Uncle Clyde. He's originally from New Orleans, but he lives over there under the bridge now. We sits here ever so often just talking about this and that. Right now he's trying to figure out if in life is alive or not. I says that it is, and so do Clyde. We're just trying to figure out a way that anyone can say that it's not.
Uncle Clyde was an older man. He seemed much older than Michael, but since I didn't know Michael's age, Clyde's age remained a mystery too. His skin was dark, as was his short, scruffy hair. His graying mustache and full beard hid both his top and bottom lips, but didn't totally obscure his peaceful smile. Although he appeared elderly, his skin was smooth and his teeth were straight and white. His demeanor was not like that of most homeless people. He seemed happy and cheerful, as if he was exactly where he wanted to be. And unlike other homeless people I'd seen in the area, he carried nothing with him. He had no bag or cart heaped with his possessions. His clothes, though tattered, were not dirty, just very worn, as if he wanted them that way.
You must be that musician Michael was telling me about. He said that you're real good, but you don't know it yet. Come here and let me have a look at you.
I glanced at Michael.
Goes on, son. It's all right.
Michael added, gesturing toward Uncle Clyde. I could understand Clyde talking that way, but it was awkward hearing Michael speak in such a manner. If I'd heard that voice over the phone, I wouldn't have believed it was him. I walked over to where Uncle Clyde was sitting. He slowly rose to his feet as if every bone in his body ached and proceeded to look me over. The way he moved made me think that I should be examining him instead. He started by looking closely at individual strands of my hair. He even pulled out a strand, which hurt, by the way, and showed it to Michael. They talked about it for a moment, but I couldn't hear what they said. He then worked his way down my body, examining everything from my eyes down to my feet. I even had to remove my shoes for him. Wear clean socks and underwear, son. You never know when a homeless man is going to give you a physical, I could hear my mom saying. I looked at Michael during the long process. He assured me with his looks that I should let Clyde continue. When he was done, Uncle Clyde looked at Michael and said,
I think that if the word life means that something is alive, then that must mean that life is alive.
Makes complete sense to me.
Wait a minute, I interrupted impatiently. Aren't you going to tell me what you found out?
About what?
They asked in unison. About me. You just looked over my whole body from head to toe. Aren't you going to tell me anything about it? Michael looked at Uncle Clyde, and I did the same.
Well, sir, I don't rightly care about your body too much,
Clyde said as he lowered himself back to the ground.
I was just looking at it to see about you. I just wanted to see if you is what Michael says you is. You know how he can stretch it to truth sometimes.
I knew what he was talking about, but it wasn't time to discuss Michael's truth stretching. I was more curious about other things. What did my body tell you about me?
Well, sir, if you really want to know, I guess it's all right to tell you a thing or two. You think so, Michael?
He glanced at Michael for his approval. Michael nodded in affirmation.
Your body resonates with a certain vibration. This vibration puts out a certain tone that I can read, depending upon what your soul is up to, that is. Sort of like how an engineer can read the tones in music. You see, your soul has an agenda for you. Now, even you don't know what that agenda is. I can see that. But you and your soul is just about to catch up with each other. It's always exciting when that happens in a person's life. For some people, it happens before they get here. Nah, that ain't no fun at all. This is where the fun is at. I want to see you again in a few years.
He turned to look at Michael.
I know that's right.
a few.
They shared a laugh. You know about music too, Uncle Clyde? I didn't know why I was asking about music when he was telling me such interesting things about myself.
Oh, yes, son, I plays music, and one day when you realize how to stop just playing your bass, you're just going to start playing music, too.
Stop playing my bass? That was the second time that day someone had talked about that. What did it mean? I was just about to ask when Michael butted in.
Uncle Clyde is the best harmonica player on the planet, in my opinion.
Yes, I is, but we ain't here to talk about me, is we? But just to let you in on a little secret, I knows a little bit about everything. So do you. That's what you is about to find out.
That's what I'm about to find out? What does that mean?
It don't mean nothing to you yet. In due time, son, in due time. You just stick with this here Michael character. You'll be all right. But if he start to treat you bad, mess with your mind too much, you just come see old Uncle Clyde. I'll be right here underneath the bridge.
He glanced at Michael, and they both started laughing again. Just then, we heard a loud screech. We turned to look and saw a car desperately trying to skid out of the way of a pedestrian crossing the intersection. The car struck the man, knocking him into the air and across the street. It was painful to watch. He landed on the curb, apparently unconscious. It happened so quickly and slowly at the same time. It didn't seem real. Michael, Clyde, and I ran to the scene. It was later that I remembered seeing slow-moving Clyde running gracefully to the man's aid. I thought Clyde was nearly crippled. Michael later told me that Clyde chooses to live and act the way he does because that way people generally leave him alone. He also told me that Clyde always says, even the government will let an old crippled homeless man be. I never thought about a person choosing to live that way. I tried to understand Clyde's position, but the comforts I was used to didn't allow it. By the time we got to the injured man, he was lying on the ground with his eyes closed. He appeared to be bleeding badly from the right side of his head. The driver of the car was unhurt. He ran over to assist, but didn't know what to do. Michael and Clyde stood there for a few seconds, looking at the injured man. By that time, more and more people had gathered around, but no one knew what to do. Michael knelt down and placed the injured man's head in his lap. Clyde knelt down across from him. "Don't touch him, you guys," I thought. I couldn't tell if the man was breathing or not, but Michael didn't seem to care. He began to sing a soft melody as he gently stroked the man's forehead. Uncle Clyde was sitting there slightly bobbing his head up and down, not nodding to the beat of Michael's tune, just off in his own world. The onlookers, well, they just looked on. They didn't seem bothered by the sight of two homeless men caressing and singing to an injured man. Or maybe they were like me, frozen with disbelief. Every once in a while, Uncle Clyde would wave his hand over the man's chest as if he was petting the air. It was a gentle motion that almost went unnoticed. Michael kept singing lightly all the time with a gentle smile on his face. After a few precious minutes, Michael and Clyde looked at each other. They looked as if they had a plan, but I couldn't tell what their intentions were. The rest of the crowd and I remained silent. Michael kept his right hand on the injured man's forehead while Clyde placed his right hand on the man's chest. They held hands with their left hands. Michael stopped singing for a moment, and then the man's body twitched. His body jumped, to be more specific. We heard a loud siren. Michael placed the man's head on the ground. As everyone turned to look at the arriving ambulance, Michael and Clyde stood up and casually made their way through the crowd. Without looking at each other, they walked off in separate directions, as if their exit was planned. As Michael walked past, he motioned for me to follow. He didn't look at me either. I glanced back at the injured man and noticed that he was now sitting up, wiping his eyes. I realized there was no blood coming from his head. I was shocked and confused. Questions immediately formed in my mind. When I turned to ask Michael about it, he was gone. When I arrived at my car, I found Michael sitting inside. There he told me that the injured man would be all right. I asked him if we needed to pick up Uncle Clyde. He told me that Uncle Clyde would be all right, too. We could hear the ambulance driving away as I started the car. I was curious about what had happened, but waited until we were on the road and the situation was over before I asked any more questions. "What happened, Michael? I know that you did something. What did you just do?"
"I helped his body reorganize,"
he answered, leaning his head against the window and closing his eyes. It was the first time I'd ever seen him appear tired. "What do you mean, reorganize?"
"His body had gone through a tremendous trauma and became disorganized. You see, each part of a person's body can act like an individual entity. Usually they work together, but when something like that happens, all the parts can take off running in different directions. Clyde and I helped bring them back together. That's the best way I can explain it."
"And you did it by singing?"
"Partially."
"What else did you do?" Michael sat up and spoke.
"Well, have you ever been to a science museum and seen the exhibit that uses sand placed on top of a thin, flat metal plate? You take a violin bow and..."
"And as you bow the side of the metal plate, the sand forms different geometric shapes depending on the pitch that's being produced."
"Yes. The sand responds to the different pitches as clay responds to a potter's hands. But with the body, it is not just the pitch that is important. It is also the tone of the sound that helps produce the desired effect."
Can you explain what you mean by tone?
Tone can mean a lot of things. It can pertain to your voice, or to color, or to the condition of your muscles. There is a tone control on your television set, as well as one on your bass guitar. Photographers and painters, as well as athletes, talk about tone. But since we have agreed to talk about music, I'll explain it this way.
He adjusted himself in his seat and continued.
Suppose we go dancing at a nightclub. We walk in and the DJ is playing music loudly. The sound system sounds great. The dance floor is packed and the girls are pretty. What would you do?
I would find a pretty girl and ask her to dance. I liked the thought of that.
What would happen if all of a sudden the subwoofers blew out and there were no more lows coming out of the speakers? Imagine the sound. What do you think would happen next?
The dance floor would clear, I answered, revising my earlier mental picture.
Precisely. Why?
The subwoofers create the low bass frequency. They shake the whole room.
Yes, and they actually shake your whole body. With a powerful system, you can feel the bass vibrating right through you. When your body starts shaking, it's like you're already dancing just from the sound of the speakers.
I get it, and if the subs go out, I lose the feeling and don't feel like dancing anymore.
Even if the girls are pretty?
He asked, smiling at me.
Right. Very good,
he said, resting his head against the window again.
You see, tone is a powerful thing. Even though the same music would be coming out of the speakers, the change in tone would cause everyone in the club to feel differently and therefore act differently. So with this in mind, you should understand that the notes you produce on your bass guitar will have different effects on your listeners depending on the tone that you use. Sometimes, tone is the deciding factor that causes a person to listen to you or not.
I never thought about tone in that way before.
If you want your audience to dance, you should use a certain tone. If you want them to quiet down and listen, another tone may be necessary. If you want them to be healed, an altogether different tone may do the trick. All I did with the man in the street was use tone and pitch to convince his energy to reorganize in a way that would cause his body to heal.
I wanted to understand all of it. What do you mean by the word convince?
When you are healing someone or something, the choice to become healed or not is not completely yours. Don't ever think that it is. You are only in charge of what you are doing. The energy you are trying to heal must agree with what you desire. And on some level, the person or thing being healed must also agree. There are many agreements that must first be made. That is why all attempts to heal do not happen the way one wishes them to.
That information was strange to me. I understood what he was saying, but I had no idea if it was true. All I had to go on was what I'd witnessed. Michael had a way of making anything understandable. Even if I didn't completely understand it the first time around, I knew he would say it again in another way. I sat back and waited.
The same is true when playing music. Have you ever realized that on some days you seem to have it, and other days, under the same circumstances, playing the same songs, you can't seem to find it? Do you think that it's all up to you, or does music have a say in the matter? Most of us think that it's only up to us. That would be a mistake.
The thought of music having a say was too much for me to grasp at that moment. He spoke about music as if it were real. That made me wonder. Not knowing what to think, I decided to ask another question. I noticed that his head had stopped bleeding when you left. Did you do that? And if so, how did you heal him so fast? He gave me a typical Michael answer.
Fast? What is fast except a reflection of your personal perspective of time? And what is time except a misrepresentation of now? I tell you this, all healing is instant. You are either sick or you are well. There is no in-between. So the only thing standing in the way of being instantly healed is time.
Wow, I guess you're right, I said, though I knew I would have to spend more time contemplating that statement. I want to understand. I really do. Can you put it in terms that I might be able to understand right now?
Understand this. Time and space are the only things that separate one thing from another. Take time and space out of the equation, and what is left? Oneness. That's it. But even though one could say that time and space are illusions, they are important. They serve a purpose. Without them, we would be unable to observe and experience individuality. The game would be over.
Do you mean the game of life?
Yes, life as we know it anyway. You see, when you dream, you are allowed to play by different rules. Dreams allow the subconscious to play itself out instantly. Wherever you want to be, there you are. Whatever you want or don't think you want, there it is, all created by you. Now, real life, as most people call it, can be looked at as long-form imagination, a place where things take time. The addition of time and space slows down our reality, and believe me, that is a blessing. In other words, time and space allow us to stop and smell the roses, or get pricked by its thorns. Learn to manipulate these elements, and you play a different game altogether. Choice, even if made unconsciously, is always yours.
Unbelievable. And music, how does that play into this scenario?
The same is true in music. There is really only one note. Space and time allow you to experience the different characteristics of that note, making it appear as many different notes. Understanding that will help you make any note fit in at any time. How you see it is always up to you. Think about it. Music and life would be much different without time and space.
Okay, I think I'm even more confused now.
Look at it this way. If a person has a cold and breathes on you, are you in danger of catching his cold?
Of course.
Well then, doesn't it make sense that it should also work the other way around? If I am more healthy than you are sick, shouldn't my healthiness rub off on you? Shouldn't I be able to help make you well?
Now that makes sense to me, I guess. Although I've never heard anyone talk about it before. So that's what you did to the man. You imposed your healthiness on him.
Yes, in a sense. And now you understand how staying healthy can benefit more than just you alone. Because I am healthy, I had a model which I could impose on him. That is one way to help others find health. Think about the word, healthy. It's made up of two words, heal thy. So you can choose to heal thyself or to heal thy brother. The choice is yours. Like playing an instrument, there are many techniques that can be used. I used tones, healing tones. When we reached that man, Clyde and I listened to see how his body resonated. Only then could we choose which healing tones to produce. Then, like the violin bow at the science exhibit, I used the vibrations of my voice to alter the tones of his body. I needed to reorganize them into a more harmonious state. I didn't need to sing loudly because the vibrations were traveling through my hand and into his head. That produced a direct connection, but the tones have to be accurate in order to produce the desired effect.
I'm trying to understand, Michael. I really am. What was Clyde doing?
Clyde was helping to push and sort of herd the body's vibrations in the right direction. Remember when I said that all the parts of his body were running in different directions? Well, his energies were scattered. Clyde helped to realign them. Once they had decided to regroup, we held hands, said a quick thank you, and were on our way.
I saw his body jump.
The soul will sometimes separate itself from the body in these types of situations to shield the person from extreme pain. Upon re-entering, the body will often jump. That's all.
That's all? As strange as the experience was, there was a quality to it that seemed to make sense. This is crazy stuff, but for some reason, it all sounds very natural. You guys are way beyond me. Now you're going to tell me I can do something like that with my bass, right?
I don't think I have to tell you. You already know. Music, like everything else, is vibrations. Doctors use lasers to operate. What are lasers but vibrations? Music in the right hands can do the same thing. Remember this. The right notes cannot do it alone. The correct tone, as well as dynamics and emotion, must be used.
Actually, all the elements of music must be present. These elements are the same as the elements of life.
The elements of music, the elements of life. I could say the same words, but somehow I knew they didn't have the same meaning. He said they were the same elements. Sometimes I felt as if I was able to keep up, but other times I felt utterly confused. This was one of the confusing times. My desire to understand all of it at once caused me to become frustrated. I wanted more answers, even though I wasn't sure what the questions were. Michael responded to my confusion with some soothing words.
You say that you saw us heal an injured man on the street. If you take Clyde, the injured man, and me, and remove the elements of time and space, how many people would there be?
One.
Remove time and space and tell me how many people were at the scene.
One.
How many people are there in the world?
One.
How many in the galaxy?
Again, I had to answer, one.
And is this one person sick or well?
Well, I hope.
Then make it so.
With that comment, he turned and looked out the window. I offered no response. While driving, I reflected on the many new ideas Michael had introduced to me in the short time since I'd met him. Many things I'd witnessed him do were impossible, or so I thought. I longed to learn how to do every one of them, and he was the perfect one to teach me, or so I thought. Somehow, he seemed to hold the key to unlock hidden parts of my brain, parts that never before existed, or so I thought. I developed a new sense of respect for him that day. Observing how he and Clyde cared for that injured man allowed me to see another side of him. I knew that Michael was crazy and often acted that way, but watching him pull it all together in a crisis like that was incredible. He conducted himself in a serious and direct manner, not with the questionable and quirky behavior that I was used to. I remember once hearing him complain about a theory being taught by a highly reputable physics professor at a prestigious university. Michael was outraged, claiming that the professor's teachings were based on theory instead of experience or direct knowledge, and therefore should not be taught as truth. Realizing that the professor in question was teaching at a university half a country away, I asked Michael how he knew what was on his curriculum.
I told you, knowledge is in the air. I just need to get that professor to realize it.
Not totally believing in his sincerity, I asked him to call the professor if he had a problem with him.
Good idea.
Without hesitation, he picked up the phone and dialed. I wondered how he knew the number and whether or not he would repay me for the long-distance call. But what perplexed me most was hearing him talk to the physics professor. Michael spoke in a tone I'd never heard him use. He used words that were bigger than my apartment. I didn't believe he was actually speaking to anyone until, as if reading my thoughts, he asked me to silently listen in. Picking up the other phone, I eavesdropped while he gave the physics professor a physics lesson. I was dumbfounded. I had no idea Michael knew anything about the subject. I couldn't understand a thing he was saying, but the professor seemed to follow along easily, although hesitantly. I almost laughed out loud when the professor asked Michael how he knew so much about matter. Michael responded that it didn't matter. It was what he knew that was important. He told the professor to allow matter to teach him about physics rather than allowing physics to teach him about matter. Then, after showing his students how to do the same, they could have group discussions based on observation, not one-sided lectures based on theory. The conversation ended with the professor apologizing to Michael and promising to modify his lectures and his teaching methods. Remembering how Michael spoke so fluently about physics with the professor while also being able to seamlessly blend with the homeless man on the street made me wonder about him and his mysterious knowledge. It was remarkable that he could be equally comfortable dealing with people as diverse as a physics professor, a homeless man, and a wannabe bass player. He'd also just healed an injured man in the middle of a crowd of onlookers by singing to him. I didn't know what to think. Hearing him speak about tone raised more new questions in my mind. From what I'd heard him say, I could alter someone's body, mind, or attitude just by altering the tone. Was it really possible? I thought about how I felt when listening to some of my favorite musicians. I loved their tones, even though each one was different, and I realized that my mood often changed when I heard them play. Was it their tones that affected me? I was starting to see tone in a much broader way, and I finally understood how it is used to fill up a dance floor. But how could I use it to do other things? More positive things, more mysterious things. That I would have to explore. Michael hadn't specified where he wanted to go, so I drove him to my house. I decided to wait until we were inside before I bombarded him with more questions. Upon our arrival, I found a surprise waiting for me. Measure 9. Phrasing.
Anything, including physical actions, can be phrased.
When we reached my house, Uncle Clyde was already there. Not outside where most people would be waiting. He was inside, sitting in the chair, of course, where Michael's friends seemed to feel right at home. Don't ask me how he got there before we did. Once we left the accident, Michael and I got into the car and drove straight home. As far as I knew, Clyde was still walking away when we left. The fact that he was already inside the house didn't surprise or bother me, even though I knew I'd locked the door. I was happy to see him. I hadn't felt comfortable leaving him at the scene. I'd wanted to pick him up, but Michael seemed to know better. Hello, Uncle Clyde.
Howdy do, son.
Uncle Clyde seemed relaxed in my home. He was sitting in the same spot Michael and Sam had been. I guess Clyde will be doing the teaching today.
I can see that finding the key isn't necessary for you either,
I joked. He looked at Michael and they shared a boyish smile.
That was amazing what you guys did out there.
Thanks. We can't take all the credit, though. Since Life was involved, she deserves some of it.
So I guess you decided that Life is alive then.
Oh, we already knew that. We were just trying to figure out how anyone could disagree.
I noticed that Clyde was now talking in what I would call a normal dialect. I wasn't sure whether it was appropriate to comment about it or not, but I decided to anyway.
Uncle Clyde, I noticed that your voice is different now. Why did you change the way you talk?
We change the way we talk according to the situation we're in or the desired effect we want to create. People react certain ways in response to how we act. You understand how the tone of your voice can change the meaning of what you say, right? Well, it can also change the meaning of what you play. I know that Michael already talked to you about that. So understand this. Certain vibrations and situations can be created by the words and phrases we use. That's why we choose them carefully. Because of how I act, talk, and live, people usually leave me alone, and I just like to be left alone.
Remember, actions as well as words are vibrations, and how we put them together can produce different vibrations, sort of like notes. An individual note sounds one way and produces a certain vibration. A group of notes put together produces different vibrations. A group of chords will produce altogether different vibrations. For example, a group of vibrations can produce a scale. It can be a major, minor, diminished, or any type of scale. These scales produce different sounds and feelings. A longer group of notes, scales, chords, or words strung together is called a phrase. Now, a phrase put together in a particular way can cause miraculous things to happen.
The common person relates phrases to words only. We musicians go a little further and add notes into the phrase category. Michael and I know that anything, including physical actions, can be phrased, and that is what helps us to do what we do. You see, all the elements of music can be phrased, not just notes. How to use these different elements is what you've been learning.
Once again, it was new information for me,
and once again, only some of it made sense. I knew that certain phrases sounded better than others, but I didn't understand how to actually use phrasing to produce a desired effect. I did understand that all things could be grouped or phrased. At least I thought I did.
Listen, son, how old are you?
I'm 25.
Let's see now. That means you've been alive for a little over 9,000 days. If you had a dollar for each day that you've been alive, you might not even be able to buy a new car. Think about that. Now, let's say that you make it to 50 years old. That's only 18,250 days. Even if you live to be 70, you're still only about 25,550 days old, not including leap years. A dollar a day, and you still can't buy a house. If we were to attach the same value to our days as we do to our money, we might understand how precious little time we have here on this planet.
I'd never thought about that. The old man's ideas were as wild as Michael's, and I was impressed with his rapid-fire addition. I couldn't do that. I wasn't sure where his dialogue was headed, but my mom always told me to respect my elders. Since he wasn't finished, I kept listening.
Now let's look at how many of these 25,550 days are spent doing nothing. Let's say that you sleep 8 hours a day. That comes out to one day's worth of sleep every 3 days, a total of 8,516 days. Subtract that from the original 25,550, and you're left with only 17,034 days. That's fewer days than if you lived to be 50. Now, add in your early years when most of your big decisions are made for you. The hours spent watching TV, time spent being sick, time spent working on a job you didn't like, and days that were just flat out wasted for one reason or another. Now, how much time do you think is left? Just a few thousand days, that's all. And that's taken for granted you make it to see your 70th birthday. That's not much time for you to become who you say you want to be unless you learn to use your mind.
Clyde pointed to his head and then to me. Scooting to the edge of his seat, Uncle Clyde continued.
Now listen here, son. How much of your precious little time is spent really becoming who you choose to be? Do you know? Actually, all of it is, but you don't know that it's you doing the choosing. How much of that time is spent consciously making yourself better? Not much. We can probably count on that time in weeks or even days. If you were to look back over your life, you could find time frames when your actions did produce the outcome you were looking for. For example, you spent a few weeks learning how to walk and you succeeded. You spent a few months learning how to talk, and you succeeded. You spent years learning how to play the bass guitar, and you have succeeded. All the things that you've held your mind to, you have accomplished, or will accomplish. You can believe that. And all of those time frames can be viewed as phrases. Normally, when talking about time, we call them phases. Both terms are correct. And even the spelling of the word gives a clue to their relation.
Clyde was putting out so many interesting ideas that I was having a hard time keeping up. I was glad when he finally paused. It would allow me time to digest his words, or so I thought. Michael didn't allow it. He stepped forward, taking advantage of Clyde's recess.
There is only one reason that you ever fail at anything, and that is because you eventually change your mind. That's it.
Michael raised both hands in the air to stress his point.
Like Clyde told you, anything and everything you have ever decided to do, you have succeeded or will succeed at doing. It may take you a day, a year, or 12 lifetimes, but if you hold your mind affixed on the idea, it will come forth. It has to. That is the law.
He looked over at Clyde and they nodded at each other in agreement. They were making bold statements. I never thought about those ideas before that day, and at that time, I wasn't sure if I believed them. They both made it appear so simple, too simple, which raised a lot of questions in my mind. The only reason I fail is that I changed my mind? Did he mean just me, or was it true for everyone? Was it true at all? And what was this law Michael had talked about? The comment about holding an idea for 12 lifetimes? That was crazy talk as far as I was concerned. I would have liked to have questioned them about it then, but they left me little time to think, let alone raise questions. I suspect they did so on purpose. It took years before I realized what they were talking about. I eventually thought about all the things I'd ever learned, from tying my shoes to algebra. Well, I never really learned algebra. But whatever I decided to learn and continued to learn, I'd eventually succeeded at learning. The things I'd failed at, especially the things I repeatedly failed at, I eventually stopped trying to learn. Michael and Clyde were right. I had simply changed my mind. Even though there were still things I had not as yet mastered, I couldn't think of a single instance to refute their claim. Uncle Clyde interrupted my thoughts.
So what I was saying before Michael chimed in is this. Your life is made up of a string of many different phrases. Most of these phrases were put together unconsciously. Now that you realize you only have a matter of days on this planet, it may be wise for you to start living consciously. The choice is always yours.
He nodded to let us both know that he was finished.
Whew, I never realized that our time was so short.
Most people don't until it's too late.
Okay, I'm starting to feel a little depressed now. Cheer me up, somebody. Let's talk about music again, can we?
Music is what we have been talking about all along. Call it life or call it music. There is no difference, except that most people's musical lifespan is much shorter, and only when the separation disappears for you will music become a part of who you are. You can see how setting up certain phrases in your life can produce desired results days, years, or decades later. Musical phrases can be set up in the same way. If you are playing a show, what you choose to play at the start of the night can determine how the listener will hear you later in the show. You can use certain musical phrases to set up his ear or his emotions for something you choose to play or do later.
I understood most of what Michael was saying, but I wasn't sure if I fully understood his setting up the listener concept. As I was contemplating the idea, Uncle Clyde started playing his harmonica. He sounded so good that I wanted to join in with my bass, but I remembered to listen first. What I heard sounded great, but it didn't make me believe that he was the best in the world, as Michael had said. At least, not yet. Clyde started by playing simple and repetitive phrases that were common to harmonica players. I'd heard harmonica players play these types of lines many times before. Realizing that he was playing a blues progression, I finally joined in. Once I started playing, I noticed how in the pocket he was. His feel was incredible. Even though he was repeating the same simple phrases over and over, it was starting to sound better and better. Just as I started to wonder if he was ever going to play anything different, he changed his pattern. He started slowly building upon the phrases he'd set up in the beginning. After a few more choruses, he began to solo on his simple blues harp like no one had ever heard in the past, playing notes and phrases I never believed could come from that instrument. And then, to my surprise, he took it up another notch. He started playing amazing lines and phrases while humming different ones at the same time. It was so incredible that I wanted to stop and listen, but I didn't. He bobbed his head, rocked his body from side to side, and stomped his feet, adding to the excitement. After about 10 minutes of the most unbelievable harmonica playing I'd ever heard, he went back to the simple phrase he'd started with. For some reason, it sounded better now, much better than before. It sounded and felt like home. Uncle Clyde was an incredible musician. Then I understood what Michael was talking about. I looked at Michael and he gave me a reassuring nod. I still couldn't understand why Uncle Clyde chose to live the way he did. A homeless man living under a bridge. He could be making loads of money playing or teaching music. Trying to figure that out by myself was way too puzzling, so I asked him about it. Why aren't you out playing gigs, making records, teaching, or something like that? You could make a good living playing harmonica the way you do. I'm not sure that Clyde ever answered my question. He seemed to have his own agenda when he spoke.
What did I do?
He asked, placing his harmonica in his breast pocket. What do you mean?
You just heard me play. What did I do?
You played some unbelievable harp.
Besides that, what did I do to you when I played?
To me? I don't know what you mean.
Think about it.
He leaned back in his chair and waited. He was staring at me as if he could see inside me. I thought for a few moments, searching hard for an answer, before I finally realized what he was talking about. You set me up. Yeah, you set me up. That's what you did, and you did it in a way that I didn't even realize it was happening. First, you started with simple phrases, simple repetitive phrases, and you made sure that these phrases were familiar sounding, too. They were singable, and you kept playing them until I became real familiar with them. Then you changed them. At first, I must admit, I didn't think that you were that good. But then, your phrasing became jazzier, in a way I never thought I'd hear on a harmonica. Your phrases also changed in length until it seemed like you weren't even breathing. Then, after taking it to the highest level possible, you brought it back to the beginning, bringing me back home again. Clyde smiled as he commented.
Oh, you think that was my highest level? That was just the highest level I knew you could understand. I could have taken you to another galaxy and left you hanging way out there to dry if and I wanted to. I took it easy on you, son.
Both he and Michael started laughing, so I joined in, too.
You all right? Oh, yeah. What you didn't notice was that I also phrased the tempo. I started out playing way behind the beat to make you feel laid back. Then as I started to change it up a bit, I combined rushing the tempo with laying back on it. This caused your body to feel a bit uneasy inside. Then when I played those long, fast, jazzy lines, I played on top of the beat. I rushed it just a little. I also left very few spaces, making it sound like I wasn't breathing. That caused you to unconsciously hold your breath a little bit, making you hyper. At the end, I quickly came back to my original phrase, laying back behind the beat again. That made you exhale and feel relaxed, like you were in a familiar place. And even though you didn't, you wanted to put your bass down and start applauding. I know you did. Works every time.
He was right. I had felt the urge to applaud. I've never known that much thought to be put into a solo on the spot, especially on a harmonica, I commented, adding a little humor of my own.
I know what you mean. Thought is usually reserved for you bass players. Ain't that right?
Touche.
You ever hear about someone breaking a glass with a high-pitched note?
He picked up my empty orange juice glass that was still sitting on the table from Sam's visit. Yes, I have. I've never seen it done, but I've heard about it.
That ain't nothing but vibrations, you see. And if it can shatter a glass, imagine what it can do to your body. Now, I can do the same thing by setting up phrases. The proper use of phrases allows me to gradually change your mind and body. Changing it all at once can cause your head to explode, just like that glass. All I do is set up groups of vibrations to produce the same or similar effects. But instead of one powerful vibration, I can use a group of vibrations. It can be done in the course of a solo, or it can be done over the course of a whole night. You know, it can be done over the course of a few days, if you want to. You can set up your listeners to hear or feel things in a particular way later on in the night or later on in their life. That's all Michael's been doing to you. He's been setting you up one phrase at a time. Actually, you've been doing it to yourself for years, too. You just didn't notice it. You've been setting yourself up for this event for a long time now.
He reverted to his old way of talking for effect, I guess. You mentioned that before, something about me getting ready for this time or something like that. What are you talking about? Uncle Clyde looked at Michael as if to get permission to speak. He slowly stood up and walked over to me. He stood so close that our noses almost touched. I could feel the warmth of his breath as he prepared himself. Whenever Michael stood this close to me, I knew that he was going to say something important.